Hey everybody, welcome to the Allison Park Leadership Podcast. As always, I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dave.
And my name is Jeff. And of course, we're father and son and on staff at Allison Park Church. I'm the lead pastor. Dave's the Northside Campus pastor. And here we are, what I believe is the final episode of season four.
Yeah, this should be released right before Christmas.
Yeah.
So Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to you. Thanks for your participation, listener and viewership. We appreciate your input, your feedback. You have given us a host of topics already for us to consider for our next season of 2024. And so we're anticipating that.
No new reviews to give thanks for today, but we will ask again, if you want to give us a Merry Christmas present, you could just take your phone right now. It won't take that long. Listen, yeah. You can just pause the episode. Here's the quick tutorial. You go to our podcast, which you're already on. Scroll to the bottom of the page. There it says leave a review or write a review, and you hit the 5-star and write whatever kind of words you want. We'll give you a shout out. That's our way of saying thank you as well. Whether this is on Spotify or an Apple Podcast, that's how you can do it. And that just really helps us to spread the word. So thank you, you know, for doing that. If you want to grab your wife's phone or your grandma's phone at the dinner table,
do two more, right?
That's fine, yeah. Too. You know, whatever you want to do. So anyway.
So one of the things we have done with every season is we have added some things that have made the podcast slightly better. Like once we jumped into this studio that we're in now, which has really improved a lot of things. What we're hoping to do as we start the next season is to create a new tagline for our podcast, because we always say the principles behind the plans, mm-hmm. which is the way the podcast started, and then it jumped into other things, theology and worldviews and personal journeys.
It's sort of the sticky stuff that most other people, not other people, but it's hard to get into, you know, without
It's the things that especially followers of Jesus are interested in getting more information about.
Right.
We're talking about it from our perspective as pastors. We're talking about it from the perspective of our understanding of the scriptures. We're also talking about it from two different generational points of view. Mm. And we're doing it in a way that allows for nuance, right?
All the complexity of life from a biblical worldview.
So we throw that out before we get into this week's topic and podcast episode to say, if you have some ideas for what you think is a good tagline description for us, we'd love to hear your insights, because as we break into the next season, season five, we hope to have that clarified.
Yeah, quick side note. People are also like, are you guys even a leadership podcast?
I'm
like,
yeah, we really aren't. But we thought we were at one point because we were really trying to address primarily leadership.
Yeah.
But I think that ship sailed.
But you know what? If you are a leader, then you can benefit from listening to this. So
yeah, actually we're sort of an anti-leadership podcast in a way,
because
we're saying in some ways there are so many leadership podcasts and teachings and conferences that we feel like maybe the world doesn't need one more of those. So we want to do some things that are different from that. Although these conversations do inform Christian mm-hmm. leaders, especially the leaders at APC.
So I guess we could say, welcome to the Allison Park Anti-Leadership Podcast. Where we don't discuss the principles behind the plans ever. Anyway, making ourselves laugh. Anyway, let's move on. It's also good for you to say that, you know, specify that, because this is one of those topics that could make some people angry too.
The one we're talking about today.
Yes.
As we wade into some territory we've never been in before. But yeah, this one here has got some prickliness to it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Especially in the Christian circles.
Yeah.
You know, today we're going to talk about God and guns.
God and guns.
We're going to talk about violence and war and any types
self-defense
and
the military.
Is there appropriate
control.
Violence that can be participated in by Christians ever? Mm-hmm. Like, is violence ever appropriate? If so, when and how, and you know.
Yep.
So.
Go ahead. Take us there, Dave.
Okay.
I'm going to follow you on this.
So let me launch some questions into the air.
Why this?
Yeah,
why why this at Christmas?
As somebody's unwrapping their gun for Christmas. So I got to start by saying, I feel like I don't know a whole lot about this subject.
Okay.
I've done some research myself, but I remember when I was in college, I had a couple of friends that I'd be in the dorm room with, and they were both missionary kids from Spain, really cool guys, Ben Bach, Daniel Prevost. I don't know if they would ever listen, but just in case, I'll give them a little shout out.
Yeah.
And they sort of like, you know, introduced some things into my worldview that I was like, Like, so they would basically be saying Jesus was definitely a pacifist and would never condone violence in any circumstance. In fact, you know, if somebody slaps a cheek, turn the other one. And, you know, they would say like, you know, people would, when they were being persecuted, they were let go from torture, but they, you know, said, finish the job to gain a better resurrection. Like, they didn't fight back. They like can, you know, they let violence happen to them in order so that God would be glorified, kind of a thing. And so I remember people would be throwing them different scenarios. What if this happened? What if somebody broke into your house and, you know, blah, blah, blah with your wife? And, you know, what would you do? And it was sort of that scenario. And they had a pretty intense pacifist view. And just listening to them, I was sort of like, I don't know what I think anymore. Like, I don't think I landed in the spot of like, I'm a full on pacifist. I don't think I landed in the spot of where I feel comfortable with war or with self-defense even necessarily. I would say for me, I have felt so back and forth and a little confused. Like, because here's the thing. To me, it feels right and just that if somebody were to break into my house, that I could defend myself and my family, and that I wouldn't want somebody to die from that. But if they did, in the defense of my family, it feels just to me.
Okay.
But what I wouldn't want to happen is that God doesn't look at that the same way, and that whenever I meet him someday, that that's a massive sin that I'd committed.
Yeah.
Like, I want to feel good and as sure as I can that that my theology is correct. So yeah, I guess like the topic of God and guns, I know that this is a highly political issue. It's not just theological.
It's an enormous political issue.
Yeah, one of the biggest. But we should know. Like, we shouldn't just be able to take stances on issues that are easy for us all to take stances on.
Sure.
I think we should talk about ones that are close to home,
okay,
especially to conservative Christianity.
Well, I mean, every time there is a mass shooting in our country, the whole world becomes inflamed with this particular debate.
Right. Exactly.
Some people will say, see, if there was a security guard with a gun in that school, there would have been someone to shoot down the perpetrator. And others people say, see, because there are guns in our society, this person had access to a gun and was able to shoot kids in the school. Mm-hmm. So there is a, I guess, argument to be made on both sides. What your Spanish missionary kid friends articulated, though, Dave, what's historically interesting to me, so we're a part of a stream churches that were started in 1900s, early 1900s, called Pentecostal Charismatic Movement, which believes in the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, the book of Acts, and the things we read about there is for today, signs and wonders, the Holy Spirit's work, a heavy emphasis on the work of the Holy Spirit. The Pentecostal movement in the first 40 years of its existence, everyone was pacifist completely. Mm-hmm. So they would not have participate in any kind of war. I think the Amish are this way as well, completely, you know, non-violent in any way, shape, or form. And it wasn't until World War II in the early 1940s where there was so much pressure on Pentecostal Christians in the United States that the Pentecostal movement shifted its stance to more of a just war view of things, which we'll get into later. So that is one particular worldview which the stream that we're in would have leaned much towards that pacifistic perspective. So anyway,
well, probably early first century Christians were generally pacifist as well.
Yeah. So I guess there's a whole lot of things we would have to talk about there, right? Because, and I don't know if you want to go here yet, Dave, I want to follow you, but
no,
Jesus never condemned people who were in the military. Hmm. So you have the centurion who comes to Jesus in Matthew chapter 8, and he asks Jesus about would he heal his servant. Mm-hmm. And you never get Jesus then saying, you know, like he says to the woman caught in adultery, go and sin no more, right, after their encounter. He doesn't say to the centurion, go and leave your post.
Right.
Right. So you would think an argument from silence would be that Jesus was okay with Christians being in the military. You have Acts chapter 10, Simon Peter goes to the house of Cornelius, who was also a centurion, and there the Holy Spirit's poured out, and a bunch of people get saved. It's the moment where the gospel jumps from Jewish only to include the Gentiles, those who were non-Jews, into Christianity. But never does it say where Simon Peter says, Cornelius, by the way, you're in a bad profession. You shouldn't be a soldier. In fact, God chooses Cornelius while he's a centurion to be, you know, the place which the Holy Spirit would be poured out for the sake of the Gentiles. So you'd have to say, if it's okay to carry the sword as a military officer, and never is there a time when you're rebuked for that, then that must be a part of the world that we live in. Like Romans chapter 13, Paul teaches that those who are in authority deserve to be honored, and that what I think he even says, does the government hold the sword for nothing, right? So there is something to the idea that Christians were supposed to honor those who were in governmental positions that were enforcing the laws, which requires force for that to actually happen. Otherwise, you have anarchy. And I don't think the Bible was presenting an anarchist perspective.
So we're fully in the middle of this, I guess, already.
Yeah, we are. That's what I said. I don't know how deep you wanted me to go, but we can back out of that and go into more whatever journey you want to go to. But let me read the verse, though. Verse 3, for rulers hold no terror for those who do right, but for those who do wrong. Do you want to be free from the fear of one in authority? Then do what's right and you'll be commended. And then it says, for the one in authority is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for these rulers do not bear the sword for no reason. They are God's servants, agents of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoers. Okay, so hold on. They hold a sword and they're agents of God. Okay, so that's not to say everything they do is godly. Romans chapter 13, verse 4, that's not to say everyone who's a police officer does godly things, or every person who's a soldier does godly things, or every government in power does godly things. But it just simply says there is a role for national governments and local governments that is a part of enforcing sort of certain moral order on the world that is protective in nature, and that the Christian mindset is supposed to honor those in authority because they hold a God-ordained role to play in society. So that's, I guess you said New Testament Christians would have been pacifists. And I don't know that that's exactly right, because you could be a Christian and be a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So obviously they weren't completely pacifist. Cornelius, who got saved in Acts chapter 10, wasn't a pacifist.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Roman centurion.
Right.
So, and he commanded other soldiers to enforce the law. So I don't think they were completely pacifistic in nature, because otherwise they would have had to, becoming a Christian would have been to lay down arms in every way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so why don't we do this? Let's break it down in a few ways then. There's probably different categories where force or violence are used. And you were talking about one there that's like specifically law, like the law.
The enforcement
of the law, right, that happens in general for the protection of people.
Right.
So there's that, and then we're talking about individual people that are using violence. Often it can be for their in self-defense or not. And then we can talk about sort of world powers.
Okay.
Because I think those are all different things.
They are all different things.
And I think the way that we do them is, when we talk about them, is different. So, okay. So when you're talking about like essentially law enforcement, you're saying that based on Romans 13, God is basically God, Paul's writing basically here that God's put authorities, local authorities in power to sort of maintain order, because there's an expectation that there are evil people doing evil things, and so God has these servants in any kind of government, positions of authority, that help to bring order and keep peace, and that's actually a godly thing.
Yeah, but we recognize that while the structure of law enforcement is a biblical thing, according to Romans chapter 13, the individual behaviors of law enforcement may not always be.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
It doesn't. So God's endorsement of the fact that there are legal forces that are needed to maintain society doesn't necessarily mean God endorses those people in power doing anything they want to do.
Right.
So there's a lot of soldiers or police officers who have abused that power that they've been given. So I think a Christian perspective would be to have a servant mindset in those roles, mm-hmm. right? So I've been given this authority or power to serve the community, and I have to always be, make sure that it, with the power I've been given, I'm doing it from a mindset of service, okay. not a mindset of dominance, right? So I think the structure is a godly structure, but it doesn't necessarily mean every behavior is endorsed. Like, I'm sure Jesus would not have been happy if the centurion had left there having received healing for a servant and then went out and rounded up people and, you know, taken money from them and abused them physically. Like, there obviously those behaviors would not have been Christ-like. Mm-hmm. So having God's approved structure in place, but with the mindset of acting like Jesus in everything that you do.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Right. And I realize, I mean, there over the years, there have been law enforcement, like issues with racism, especially.
Sure.
You know,
well, and not just here in our country, all over the world, the people who hold the power have the greatest risk of abusing those powers and not fulfilling their calling to serve the community and to do things that are the benefit for everybody.
Right. So while authority in general is a thing good. That's set up by God, often we have corrupt authorities that are using it evilly.
Yes.
And they're not using it to protect people. But in general...
But even in that case, neither did Jesus nor Paul teach the overthrow of those authorities. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So Jesus did not lead a revolutionary movement against evil authorities.
Right.
And he lived under many of them. Mm-hmm. Herod and Herod's sons and Caesar. But Jesus' primary concern was not ripping down the power structures that were corrupt. His desire was to bring a different kind of kingdom into the world through his servant leadership.
Quick side note, which he was saying, even pay corrupt taxes to a corrupt ruler. I know that's kind of a current thing right now. I don't know if this would be a whole episode or not, but like, do I have to pay taxes? You know what I'm saying? It's a whole other thing that I feel like is a big issue under the table.
So Christianity was designed to be a servant-oriented, spiritually subversive movement to overthrow the powers of darkness and to bring about the kingdom of God on earth. But like he said to Peter, if you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Mm-hmm. So our movement isn't a violent movement. It's a nonviolent movement, and it is designed to bring change by affecting people's hearts. So that's one frame of this. Maybe let's go personal. What about owning a gun or self-defense in the home?
Yeah.
Let's ask that question, because I know a lot of people at Allison Park Church own a gun. I don't. I've shot a gun once in my life, actually. Went pheasant and quail hunting once. So I'm not a gun owner. My dad was not a gun owner. Never really learned about them. I have nothing against them necessarily. It's just not part of my practice. I didn't raise you that way either. Have you ever fired a gun?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you have?
I've fired a gun before, but I've never,
How? When did that happen?
Oh man, when have I so
target practice or something?
Yeah, a number of times. I've probably shot guns a number of times, just ranges and stuff like that.
So let me ask you this question: so you wouldn't defend James and Sarah if someone entered your home, and you wouldn't use violence to protect your family?
I'm not saying that I wouldn't. I'm saying I've been concerned. If I did, would I be judged for it?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Well, I don't think we ever see that kind of action as condemned. It's never really condemned in the scripture, someone defending themselves in the midst of something. Now, Jesus did teach some things like if you hit on one side of the cheek, you turn the other, right? But I don't think that was even Jesus saying, submit yourself to abuse, right? Mm. I think it was more, your first response should be that of love and forgiveness, give the person another chance. But I think there are boundaries that we would say are just naturally healthy boundaries that we just don't go back over and over into a situation.
Let's do this then. Let's start in the case of an exception.
Okay.
Let's start in the case of an exception, and then we can hit a general rule. Because I think this is part of what sort of caused me confusion. So I need to look this up, and I'll do it right now as we're talking. But my current understanding would have been that we are not to resist with force persecution.
Yeah.
So that if somebody, even physically, if like, let's say the government starts for religious reasons coming after Christians, would Jesus be okay with us
Okay, can I give you an anecdotal story? You'll love this story.
Please, please.
Okay. Now I'm going to out my good friend Johannes Amritzer, because let's go into a real life situation that actually happened. The very first time we ever sent a missions team that worked with SOS, we went in 2006. I know
this story. This is a great story.
Well, we went in 2006 and we went to a predominantly Muslim area. We were well received by most of the people in the city. Most of the city was not at all upset that we were there or preaching about Jesus, but there were some who were upset about it. So we were getting trained for this. Johannes had come in and he had met with the team members and their families to talk about some of the risks that we were going to take. He said, look, we're going into a place where some people might not like us. And if we're persecuted, you know, we just have to be ready for that. And so one of the guys said, well, what happens if they come at us? You know, what should we do? And he said, well, you know, it depends on what the situation is. If it's just something that's moderate or whatever, and we can get away, we're going to get away. But he said, there will be women on this trip, young ladies that are on this trip. And if someone comes towards any of our team to try to do them harm, he said, pick up the nearest piece of wood, the stick, and fight like the man that you are. And I remember looking around the room and thinking, oh my goodness, I've never heard anything like that. So, and on that trip in one of the villages, they were throwing rocks at our team. And one of our guys, Bill Craig, got hit by that rock in the head. Mm-hmm. Now, they didn't pick up rocks and throw them back. They got in the bus and they drove away. But there would have been at some point in time, if they had come at the team members, our team members would have been expected to build a wall. The guys in the group would have stood their ground and tried to protect the women that were there. We wouldn't have just laid down and say, come kill us. So I guess you would say they use every means possible to get out of the situation where any kind of violent response would have to be used. But in the case where someone that you're in charge of, someone that you've been given care over, mm-hmm. is now under attack, and you have the ability to fight back to prevent them from being injured, you would fight back to prevent them from being injured.
But let's take your illustration. Let's go further with this, okay? I've heard some people say, I would never go there without a gun, okay? So you go, now we're going to this place, and it's not guards we're paying. We're talking about our missionaries are all carrying handguns, and somebody throws a brick.
So I think that we as United States citizens in a foreign country carrying guns around, number one, I don't know how you get that there. Uh-huh. That's one question. But, okay, so now that the SOS ministry is so large, and you're talking about 50,000 people on the field, they hire professional security carrying guns, often military.
Right.
Because it's in no one's interest. The government, the local city leaders, the churches, SOS, anybody, the people that are there participating, it's in no one's interest for there to be a conflict that breaks out where people are injured or hurt or lose their lives. Mm-hmm. And so the proper security measures are put in place. But it's not like I'm going to pray for you with one hand and hold my pistol with the other.
Right.
Yeah. Just in case someone looks at me wrong. No. So I think it is, If force is going to be used, it has to be done in extremely limited fashions, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's in extreme cases, doing everything within our power to mitigate what could be a bad thing that would happen, taking the proper precautions, hiring the right security, going through the right safety protocols, all of the things that are, so if you live in a house, making sure that your doors lock well and you have security systems, like doing everything that you can do. So the very last resort in any circumstance would be the use of violence in self-defense, not where you're like, give me a reason. You know what I mean? I'm packing today, so give me a reason. And no, it should be a last resort thing, not a first response kind of thing. I think especially for those who are followers of Jesus, because again, our mindset is not with violence. It's designed to be servant-oriented leadership, which when persecuted, our first response is to absorb that persecution.
So
and to celebrate that we've been worthy to suffer for the cause of Christ.
Let's play this out a little further, okay? So Matthew 5:10-12 says, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile and persecute you and other all kinds of evil against you, falsely my account, etc. Then we look at a lot of Paul's missionary journeys where he talks about the persecution that was conducted against him, where he was beaten and whipped and put in chains.
But it's interesting, even with Paul, I just taught this in the ministry school, Alex Park Leadership Academy, because I go through the book of Acts. Okay, here's a couple of interesting little episodes. So he goes into Philippi, and he gets arrested after casting out a demon from a psychic girl.
Okay.
And they beat him and Silas with a rod, and they put him in a prison. And then God sends an earthquake, and they're let out of prison, and the jailer gets saved, and a lot of prisoners get saved. And after, when they come to look for him, they discover that they were Roman citizens. And Paul said, no, you're not just going to let us out of here now. You beat us without permission. Mm-hmm. So he uses his governmental slot as a citizen. In another situation, I don't remember what chapter now, Dave, Paul, before he is beaten, mentions that he's a citizen, which means he's basically appealing to the authorities around him to protect him, to use their swords to protect his status.
Yeah.
So sometimes Paul suffered. And honestly, I wonder why in the world, Paul, would you not say you were a citizen before they beat you in Philippi? Mm-hmm. Like, if that gets you, if that's your get out of jail free card,
right?
Why not leverage that? And I guess in that particular situation, Paul must have understood there was another purpose that God had, that his suffering was going to serve a greater purpose for the cause of Christ. So I don't know if I answered that by all that little rant, but
yeah, I think I guess
Paul never fought back.
Right.
But he did sometimes use the government structure to protect himself from further harm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Jesus never fought back.
Right.
But he did have Simon Peter standing by his sword with a sword and at the moment of his arrest. Mm-hmm. And when Simon Peter cuts the servant's ear off and Jesus heals the man's ear, he doesn't tell Simon, "What's wrong with you?"
Yeah. Well, right. I read this the other day and I was like, oh, I didn't see this before. I feel like I was reading in Luke, but he actually says, like, you should each go buy a sword.
He does.
And then they're like, well, we have these two. He's like, oh, that's enough. That's
good enough. Right. Put in our translation. So they're at the Last Supper and Jesus is like, there's going to be a time in the future where they're going to come after us all. And so you need to be prepared for this, you know, buy your guns. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the weapon of choice at the time. And they said, we got two guns right here. We got two swords right here. And he's like, okay, right. Like, I don't think you got the point here, guys. I wasn't saying go buy guns or go buy a sword. He was saying it's about to get violent. Uh-huh. And so when Peter has his sword and he cuts off the servant's ear, I have to say on Peter's defense, doesn't that logically follow that he was doing what he thought Jesus might have wanted him to do?
Right.
But then, a few minutes before mentioned, do you have any swords?
Yeah, no
and
doubt.
We got these two. And so, you know, Peter was like, I got it, guys. I'm packing right now. And then when they show up to arrest him, he's like, yeah, like it brings out his ninja on him and he takes the guy's ear off. And so you can see sort of the balance of the conversation here.
Jesus flips it then.
He does.
So then he goes and he heals the person and he says, no more violence. We're not going to resist them. And then he doesn't resist. That's what's confusing to me about this.
I think it is a nuanced thing. It is confusing. Because, again, if Jesus would have said, it is never right to own a sword. Like if Jesus taught that at the Last Supper, it is never right to be prepared physically for the fact that you might get attacked. If he had said that, then in the garden, you would have expected him to surrender.
Yeah.
I actually almost think it's the governing rule that when under attack, you're expected to defend yourself. And that the exception to the rule is that when you would say, okay, go ahead. I actually think that, you know, the rule would have been Paul using his citizenship to prevent his suffering.
Well,
but there were exceptions to that rule.
The rule is probably if you're being attacked.
If you're being attacked.
Try to escape.
Okay,
first.
Right. And then your self-defense mechanism is your last resort.
Yes.
Not your first response.
Right. So then let's just say this. As far, I can at least recap. You're essentially what we're saying that we can see from Scripture is that when it comes to protecting life of other people around you, protecting yourself or other people, it should be our last resort to use violence. But if the only way to protect those that are vulnerable around us with violence, there seems to be exceptions allowed in this case, because violence in general shouldn't be used. It's very clear we're not supposed to use violence.
But absolutely.
If for protection of life, that's one thing. How about protection of property? Like, you always hear these stories about people in Texas, and I don't know why they're always in Texas, but they're like going to shoot somebody who steps into their lawn because they're worried they're going to take their chair or something. You know what I mean? Maybe it's not their, or their dog or whatever. Like, it, in terms of defending your property, would you say that violence is a measure?
I think your first step is to follow the law. Call the police.
Well, what if the law allows you to shoot somebody that sets foot on your property?
I think that's probably not going to the last resort phase. I think that's probably being a little too in love with the fact that you have a gun that you can
use. I think that's wrong.
If you need to. Yeah.
I think that would be considered a sin.
You're parsing now because if someone's on your property and you don't know who they are, you don't know what level of threat that they pose. And so again, first response is not to shoot them. I think it might be to figure out some way to get around the use of lethal violence in all
situations.
Firing
gun into the air or whatever. Yeah,
even with law enforcement, I think that's one of the balance points. Doing the use of violence, lethal force, should be the last of the last resorts. Every other mechanism should be tried, even in a situation where someone is perpetrating a crime. If there's a way to stop that person without the use of lethal force, I think that's always in the best interest. Now I'm in an area where I'm not in law enforcement. I have a lot of respect for people who lay their lives on the line to do that. And I'm not trying to be judgy about that. Now we're into theology.
Well, I'm talking about personal home.
Yeah.
So somebody is in your lawn and they're not even trying to break in. They're just trying to take something and you don't want them to take something. Probably.
I think there are other mechanisms than the use of lethal force that should be used.
Even just like for me, Or somebody, like, somebody mugs you, but they're not mugging you at like knife point.
So
or something.
Some people are looking for a fight.
Sure, but wait,
just go ahead and provoke me, and I'll show you what I got going on here. I think that's sort of an arrogance that doesn't. Unfortunately, sometimes there is a Christian, like, go ahead and, you know, sort of, I like being a Christian and having this mindset of, you know, guns protecting me is almost linked. And I don't know how that ends up.
I don't know how it is either.
Yeah.
But it's like if somebody takes your coat, give them your cloak too.
Yeah, that's right.
So if somebody's stealing from us, it's something different than if somebody's trying to attack a vulnerable person or us even, right?
Right. That's a different case. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, where Paul is talking about don't take each other even to court, he says, wouldn't you rather be wronged than and to have injustice done to you than to make yourself to be a fool in front of everybody and by suing your brother. So I think, it's probably better to have someone rip you off than it is to use lethal force in a time where you really shouldn't be.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's good to clear up. Let's now, so we talked about law enforcement.
But nothing wrong with having the gun as a deterrent.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with somebody seeing the gun as a deterrent, right? So just to say, hey, by the way, if you come in here a little further, there is something here that you need to be aware of. I don't think that's a problem. And so if a person is carrying a gun, or that makes them feel safer or more confident, there's nothing wrong with that.
Gotcha.
Now, biblically, I know a whole bunch of people that would like to see efforts to remove guns from society overall. And there are probably some who are listening to this who think, how can you not advocate for gun control to remove all guns from the world because guns are one of the causes for a lot of unnecessary death? That's a side of this we haven't really talked about much.
Yeah. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. So we probably need to deal with that. So I think in a perfect utopian world, it would be a world where there is no violence. There is no threat, and there are no guns. I want to live in that world where the potential for violence is completely taken away. And every time there is a mass shooting of some kind, it's just gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
And something inside of all of us cries out to say, there needs to be a solution to this. This shouldn't be happening. A lot of the rest of the world looks at what happens in the United States with these mass shootings, and they And they think, why is that the case there? Mm-hmm. So the longing and the desire to end those kinds of horrific violent activities is a good one.
Yeah, sure.
I also then look at what happened in Nazi Germany in the early days of World War II, where the Jews were rounded up and put on trains and taken to concentration camps and then killed 9 million people that were murdered. And I wonder if there had been guns present in the Jewish community and they could have taken a stand of some kind, would the Holocaust have been possible? I remember hearing former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice talk about how in the South, when she was growing up, when there was KKK roaming about, burning crosses on the lawns of black people, that one of the things that her father did to cope with that, she said there was one time in particular where they were coming to her house. And the fact that her dad had a gun to scare them off was what prevented further problems. So I think tragic, violent death is a part of a sin-cursed, evil-dominated world. And you could probably make a case that guns prevent more violence, and you can make a case that guns cause more violence. And I honestly think that's a big issue. Where it comes down to the question in the United States of America is what the Constitution says.
Sure. Yeah. And I think the other thing, just in terms of, this, we don't want to get into the politics of this.
Right.
But I think just from a ignorant bystander in the United States, from my perspective, people being able to get access to crazy, highly specialized weapons that they use to gun people down feels like, like, can anybody get
that's
themselves
not just a hunting rifle?
Yeah,
right?
Can anybody get themselves a sniper rifle, like a military grade, certain special kind of a scope thing where they can be a mile away and shoot kids or whatever? Like, I would think there is a, even within the levels of self defense, there's probably a level of like reason. I mean, of like, you know, as in terms of like vetting people and making sure that it's not going to anybody. Oh, I don't know. This is a confusing topic.
So this is where. What you would call reasonable gun laws is one of those things that the right and the left side of our country is so at odds with each other that there can't even be reasonable conversations, because to give an inch to the other side is like losing, mm-hmm. right? And so this also happens when it comes to laws about abortion. Most people, when it comes to the idea of abortion, don't like the idea of late-term abortion, right? So obviously, as followers of Jesus, we believe life begins at conception and should be protected from that point. But for even those who have a concern about that, they're unwilling to even have a conversation about, because in Europe, many European countries don't allow for abortion after 12 weeks and some after 20 weeks. And in our country, it goes all the way up till birth in most cases. So again, even reasonable people say, that's crazy. Right, but because left and right are so at each other, you can't even have reasonable conversations to move the needle when it comes to whatever laws are there.
Because you say that your problem is the only problem. That's the thing. It's like, in order to see the problem that I care about more fixed, you have to ignore other problems. And as Christians, that's not an option
right.
for us.
Yeah,
we've talked about this, where there are different social issues that Tim Keller pointed out that are
So
we have to get back fully into that today.
Right. So now you want to talk the global the war part, huh?
Yeah. So I'll frame it for a second from this perspective. So let's just we won't retread ground. I'll summarize. You're saying that somebody who's a soldier in an army like Cornelius is saved, right. And there's even the centurions that Jesus talks to. He doesn't rebuke them for being centurions. So I don't think that there's a direct command. Just like for rich people, sell your possessions and give to the poor.
Right.
Or else you're at risk of not being in heaven, is what he basically says. Like, so hard for a rich person to go to heaven because they're attached to their wealth. But we don't see that same kind of a thing put on soldiers. My question would be this. Okay, so it's not condemned outright at all to be a soldier in an army. Is God just neutral about any of the wars that happened? Is God neutral to what's happening in Ukraine versus Russia? was God neutral to, you know, all of the wars that have happened in American history, yeah. you know, the things that are happening, is there such, I mean, we talked about this idea of a just war.
Yeah. So
but like, well, let me just, before we, I yeah. just want to frame more questions. Is any war where we can't really totally transparently see what it's being done for or the different reasons, is any war totally just? You know, like I realized that fighting against the Nazis was a just war. Absolutely. Like there's no, the atrocities that were being committed, that's a just war. But there's, in our world, there, it's so nuanced. Like, you know, it's, I've seen a lot of people talk about for love of country. Is patriotism a reason for a just war? Like, what are the, yeah, I guess I'm just like, what does God think about all this stuff?
Yeah. So, I'm reading off of a site, BBC site, and it's this definition of just war. Okay. The just war theory is largely a Christian philosophy.
Uh-huh.
So up until the advent of Christianity in the world, let me just say, war was just your side is right, the other side is wrong. Right. There were no ethics to it. Like you had the power, the other people didn't. You just destroyed the other side. It attempts to reconcile three things, just war theory. That taking human life is seriously wrong. We'd say amen to that. Number two, that states have a duty to defend their citizens and defend justice. And number three, that protecting innocent human life and defending important moral values sometimes requires a willingness to use force and violence.
Can you summarize that again, those three?
Taking human life is wrong.
Uh-huh.
We're balancing these three, right? Taking human life is wrong. States have a duty to defend their citizens and defend justice.
Uh-huh.
Three, protecting innocent human life and defending important moral values sometimes requires a willingness to use force and violence.
So that's probably a good personal philosophy too, based on how we talked about yeah. this earlier. Okay.
So the question then becomes, so it says the principles of just war originated with classical Greek and Roman philosophers like Plato and Cicero and were added to by Christian theologians like Augustine and Thomas Aquinas. And so these are the, I guess, the balancing points. So we would say, fighting to destroy Nazi Germany, which was based upon the idea of right supremacy and was destroying whole ethnicities
yeah.
in their mindset, would have been protecting innocent human life and defending citizens and defending justice. Not every war that the United States has fought has been for those purposes. Mm-hmm. World War II fits into that category. Mm-hmm. World War I was a confusing mess.
Right.
I still don't necessarily know that I totally understand the reasons for World War I. It was a European conflict that the United States was brought into because the Germans sunk one of our ships.
Right.
Cruise ships. People lost life and everyone got mad and they were like, we need to pay them back for this. And we got involved and probably tilted the war in the direction of our allies. We could go into recent wars like Afghanistan and Iraq. And so I think if you go into this from the perspective of what's happening with Israel and the Gaza Strip,
I'm literally reading an article right now.
Yeah. They would probably say we have a duty to defend our citizens and defend justice. And we want to protect innocent human life because many of their people have been kidnapped. Those who are on the Palestinian side would say that they started this conflict to defend themselves and defend justice because they feel like they're being dominated, colonized, or whatever. I think I probably would lean much more towards the Israel side of just war in this particular instance because of the kinds of things that were perpetrated on by the Hamas terroristic group and even what their values are stated. But yeah, those this is the filter. So I mean, honestly, once you're in the military, by the way, I should say, you don't have the right any longer to determine how just it is. Like if you're a captain or a lieutenant or a centurion for that matter.
Yeah.
Once you sign up to serve the powers that be. And unless you're actually being asked to do something individualistic that is cruel or unusual, once you're in the midst of the conflict, you have to follow orders or the whole system breaks down. So I don't think individual soldiers are judged for the overall war that they're fighting in because their assignment is to carry out the dictates of the organization that they represent. Mm-hmm. So in that case, I think any soldier that signs up to serve their country is doing a noble thing, mm-hmm. because they're willing to give their life to protect the values and the justice of a society that they belong to. Mm-hmm. So I think we can rightly honor every veteran in every war. Mm-hmm. Because again, once you become a soldier, you lose the right.
On any side?
Huh?
Any soldier of any war on any side? Well,
obviously those who fought for Nazi Germany at some point in time crossed the line where they would have had to make a decision of betraying their country and being killed because they were now in violation of what their commanding officers were telling them to do or to lean into the atrocities that were being committed. So no, I don't think any war.
I mean, because there are plenty where the side that some people. Yeah. The thing is, you don't
once
know.
Once you're like, in it, though, once you're a soldier, you can't go AWOL.
Yeah.
And, right? And you would have to abstain with the potential loss of your own life. Mm-hmm. I think there would be a time for that.
Yeah.
Where you would say, I'm sorry, I cannot do that. You'll have to kill me. You can court-martial me, mm-hmm. punish me, but I'm not doing that. I would say in most normal cases, when you're serving in the armed services, you're expected to follow the commands
right.
that are given to you.
Right.
And I think in most normal cases, that's honorable.
Yeah. You were just mentioning Israel. I'm just reading articles about this. This is such an interesting case study on this because, so like obviously what happened with Hamas's attack was horrifying.
Horrible.
And definitely is a grounds for a just war. The argument from the other side is that the response has been
disproportionate.
Indiscriminate and disproportionate, that there lots of civilians are being killed without a lot of care taken, and it's disproportionate, and there's way, way, way more thousands on the other side without a whole lot of intentions to try to establish peace. That's part of what muddies this.
Well, and because we really don't know. We only know what both sides of the situation are telling us. It's really hard to make a judgment.
Yeah.
Because then you also have the people on the side of Israel who are saying a lot of civilian life is being lost because the Hamas group is using civilians as shields
right.
specifically for propaganda purposes.
Yeah.
Now you say, well, how do you know that's true? I don't know. I don't know what's true. I do know that it is. I think the initiation of this conflict happened by Hamas. Mm-hmm. And I think Israel's response had legitimacy to it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you can now turn a blind eye to anything that's happening. And honestly, it's a complicated situation. I think, you know, Jesus, or what, James chapter 1 says, everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. I think when it comes to nations and war, I think this should be, we should go incredibly slow. Mm-hmm. When it comes to those things, I actually remember sitting, and I know I'm taking risks here. We're even having this conversation, Dave. I mean, we could have offended both sides of the equation by now.
Yeah.
I remember after 9/11, and there was such intensity around what had happened to our country and the thousands of people who had died. And then I was watching President Bush and he was talking about going to war. And I remember thinking to myself, if we are, because, you know, people say American has got Christian roots and is in some ways a Christian country or has, but part of me wanted to say, should our response to this attack have been, we forgive you, not we're coming after you. I almost wonder, was there a better way? Because I'm not sure now 20 years later, especially with the messiness and the way that our troops exited Afghanistan, that the country is any better off or that the world is any safer. But there was a desire because of the grief and the anger to make, some people were saying, make Afghanistan a parking lot, mm-hmm. nuke them, blow them to smithereens. They deserve it. The war in Iraq was even more questionable. You look and you say the just war standards, I'm not sure who we were defending or what values we were fighting for in that particular one, because they weren't even technically involved in 9/11. Mm-hmm. That was really a confusing one.
Well, I mean, when you go through, I mean, the dictatorships and stuff, when you go through like even like all like the Gulf War of the 90s and then go beyond, a lot of it has to do with oil prices and the petrodollar and all that confusing stuff where, you know, it has helped to stabilize the American economy. It's confusing.
Again, if you're a military person and you've served in any of those conflicts and you signed up to defend your country and you went and did what you were asked to do, I don't think that takes any speck of honor away from you.
Sure.
For being in the military. And I don't think it's anti-Christian to be a military officer. I think it's what the discipline you go through and the sacrifice you make and the willingness to be away from your family, put your life on the line. Oh my goodness. Just it's worthy of honor upon honor upon honor. Theologically, however, if we're leading nations and we're the ones making the decisions about what should happen, I think we should be very cautious about. I mean, that's why we are pro-life. Pro-life, we don't want to see babies killed in the womb. We don't want to see people killed on the streets. We don't want to see people shot up in mass shootings. And we certainly don't want to see nations going to war with each other unless it is for the absolute protection of something that we would feel to be just and righteous in the world. Mm-hmm. And as followers of Jesus Christ, I, like you, would lean more pacifist, but not completely there where I would say there's never a time to defend your family, never a time to join the military, never a time to fight a just war. Yeah. I think if we had avoided fighting the just war in Nazi Germany, there would have been millions upon millions of others who would have died in that conflict.
That's true. So summarize again how like those three principles that we can
the just
also
war?
Yeah.
Okay.
As we close.
It is the philosophy that attempts to reconcile three things, taking human life as seriously wrong, that we have a duty to defend our citizens, a state or nation does, and defend justice, and that we have a duty to protect innocent human life.
So essentially, if we're applying this personally, that taking life is wrong, we should be very, very, very careful about that. But that, especially if you're over a household or you have people that you're protecting, like protecting yourself or others is important, especially if they're vulnerable, if they can't protect themselves. That's so.
By the way, there was a great movie that was made about World War One. I can't remember the name of it now, but it's about a guy that was a pacifist and he joined the army. And the only thing he could do that would not allow him to take up, that would allow him to operate by his convictions to not take arms against someone else, was to become a medic.
Is that Andrew Garfield?
And this guy ends up rescuing all these people. Like his heroism is that he runs out into the battlefield to find people wounded and he carries them to safety. And so the whole movie is about him living by his convictions and yet serving with honor in the military, helping those who were being affected by war. And it's
Hacksaw Ridge. Is that what you're talking about?
Hacksaw Ridge. Uh-huh. That's a great movie. It's a great movie, and it has a good depiction of this tension, right? This guy who's on the extreme of nonviolence, but still willing to participate to serve his country in the conflict because he wanted to be patriotic and defend his country's stance, but without being willing to take up arms and shoot somebody else. Yeah. So anyway, obviously we live in a complicated world filled with a lot of evil. In heaven, we won't have these questions.
Yeah.
But while we're here on earth, we recognize, and I think even the United States Constitution and Bill of Rights is based upon this belief system that because we live in a flawed and selfish world, there has to be some checks and balances that protect us from our own selfishness and greed. And the right to bear arms, as well as freedom of speech and freedom of press and freedom of religion, were designed to be some of those checks and balances against, you know, people being overrun by tyranny. It hasn't been perfect, even with checks and balances. Human nature, at its very core, is selfish and wicked. Mm-hmm. And all of us have the potential of doing selfish, wicked things, not just the other guy.
Yeah.
And so having some kind of protections in place with force is a necessary part of living the world that we're in.
Well, that helped at least give me more peace of mind.
Okay. Merry Christmas, by the way.
Go ahead and open those guns, I guess. No, I don't know. It's still complicated, but that was helpful. Hopefully it clarified some things for you. If you have other questions, I mean, I feel like at this point there's probably no issues we wouldn't address on this podcast. Yeah. Anything that comes up.
And as we always say, you have the right to disagree with our posture, and we are in no way trying to make this a political conversation. So if you heard us saying that we are on the right or the left side of this, we just actually tried to describe all the points of view and then insert some scriptural thoughts in the midst of it all.
In fact, on that note, just in case people are wondering, I think both of us are very middle of the road when it comes to politics, just because we feel like neither party, dominant party, really represents all of the major issues that Christians need to stand up for.
Yeah.
And that makes it a challenge, but we're doing our best to try to follow Jesus in terms of...
Yeah, well, and my primary role in the world is to be an ambassador of another kingdom.
Right.
Right, the kingdom of God. And so I want to live in this country and make it better, but I also want to recognize my primary allegiance is to Jesus, and he's the only one that holds the solutions for what is broken in our world. But, however, political parties, government officials, policies, values, all have to be enacted. It's not like we can just get rid of the system and everybody love each other. That's anarchy. Mm-hmm. And so it's good to be politically engaged and to have a point of view and to know what you believe and try to get the people elected that are going to do things that you think are just and right without putting your whole hope in that as the solution for a broken world.
Or seeing the other side as the enemy. Because we're all, if you're a Christian, you're part of the same family, you know, even if you
have different views. And our primary fight is not against flesh and blood, right? So,
anyway.
All right, yeah. So, hope you have an amazing new year. We're looking forward to season 5. We're also looking forward to starting this year in January with some seasons of fasting and prayer. We have a conference at the end of January called the Ignite Conference. It's Thursday, January 25th. We'd love you to be there in person if you can get there. We also have a sacred assembly night the night before, January 24th. We're going to be taking Wednesdays during the month of January, fast and pray, and spending a 3-day fast. We want you to start the year with healthy rhythms. And hopefully, as a part of the podcast family, you feel like in some ways we're also helping to pastor you. And so we care about you. We hope you have an amazing new year and a great holiday season with your family.
Yeah. And again, just plugging this like we always do, because it's really helpful. If you have a chance just to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or if you can like and subscribe on YouTube or share this in social media, all that would be very helpful to us as we try to spread the word about this. So this has been the Allison Park Anti-Leadership Podcast. We'll see you again next year.